KALW.
We're approaching a deadline and it feels like we need immediate action. And I think that has to come from everyone in all areas of our lives.
The students of Berkeley High are fighting to make their campus more sustainable.
When we talk to people here, everyone's like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then nothing gets moving.
We'll hear how affecting change is often easier said than done. Then a Cirque du Soleil clown talks about life under the big top.
Yeah, a lot of people have this impression that anyone can do it, and that's why it's hard, right?
And Audiograph, a signature sound from around the bay.
If I want him to go fast, they are somewhere, and I want him to leave from that era quick, then I would just make a whistle
I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. From Greta Thunberg to youth versus apocalypse, young people all over the world are fighting for more sustainable solutions. One of those places is Berkeley, where students have been pushing to make their schools more sustainable for decades. Despite those efforts, there are some subtle issues at play that keep Berkeley schools from being as progressive as they want to be. Reporter Jameson Weiss has that story.
Wow, this school is so nice.
It looks like that on the surface. Spend a week here.
Berkeley High is a public school in the heart of downtown Berkeley with around 3,500 students. I spoke to a couple of them about what they're doing to fight climate change.
I'm Zoe Crean. So I'm the Commissioner of Environmental Sustainability for ASB Leadership, so Associated Student Body Leadership.
I'm Amelia Faria, and I'm the co-president of the BHS Green Team.
They help organize environmental initiatives, and there are a ton. The Waste Committee, for example, sorts the school's recyclables and compostables from the garbage bins. Then there's climate activists. That's for?
Organizing student action. So right now, they are working with Youth vs. Apocalypse to discuss future marches and protests.
There's the Green Team, which raises money to get clean water to schools without access. And in Berkeley?
We also have the Berkeley High Cleanup Crew, and they do cleanups around in parks and other public spaces.
Zoe and Amelia tell me there are lots of other environmental groups on campus, all of which are completely student organized, but
when we talk to people here, everyone's like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then nothing gets moving. It's kind of hard to get things going.
Because a lot of these efforts have to go through adults.
I don't think it's a lack of caring. It might just be that they have so much on their plate that this kind of it's a second tier issue.
But if you ask those adults?
We're trying to be very green and very sustainable as much as we can be.
That's Rick Keeley. He's the head of purchasing for the Berkeley School District.
My job is to purchase and distribute the food to the various campuses.
He tells me that they've always been searching for new ways to stay sustainable. And this has included preventing food waste and getting rid of plastic straws. One of his more recent initiatives is to improve the serving trays that students use at lunch.
These are two the trays that I'm looking at. So the idea was to get a 5-compartment tray that the kids can put a cup on, put their fruit on, put their salad on, put their hot entree on. The fact that we were able to find it in compostable is a bonus.
But that's when he ran into a problem. It turns out that the material used to make these trays comes from China. President Trump placed tariffs on Chinese imports, and that forced Worldcentric, the company who makes these trays, to raise prices. Mark Marinozzi is vice president of marketing and public relations at Worldcentric.
Admittedly, in full transparency, we do make most of our products overseas, particularly in China. It's been very much a challenge for us to find domestic suppliers for comparable, particularly molded fiber products.
There are some suppliers in the States, but Mark says that there are a few problems with their material. First, the plants used to grow the material domestically are much less efficient than the bamboo and sugar cane that's used in Asia. And Mark says domestic material is generally of lower quality than what they can get from China.
So when we hear about, the Berkeley schools being really challenged with, utilizing our products, I want to express that we have a great deal of empathy about that. However, we can't at this point continue to have a sustainable business and continue to absorb the hits on the tariffs.
But when I talked with the students back at Berkeley High, it seemed like the tariffs were just the beginning of their problems with this new initiative.
Even if there is compostable foodware, the compost bins are only in the cafeteria and on some locations outside. So if kids go somewhere else to eat, then they don't even have a compost bin to put their compostable foodware into.
The student leaders bring me to the cafeteria, and they point out that by far the biggest issue is that hardly anybody at Berkeley High even eats there.
You can see there's like 100 students in here. We have like 3,500, 3,600 students at the school, so I don't see any cafeteria food here, actually. Oh, there's a tray.
It's an open campus. I ask Zoe and Amelia if the cafeteria food is bad or something, and they can't even tell me because they don't eat there.
Almost 100% of my friends have never had lunch in the cafeteria.
Yeah, there's just so many options around downtown that like it doesn't really occur to me to come here.
For those students who do get lunch in the cafeteria and have a place to compost, they still may not properly sort their waste.
If you're inside, it can be really confusing because the recycling bins in the classrooms are green, which is associated with composting, and they're not clearly labeled, so you're like, is this paper or cans or food?
Plus, recycling and composting rules are strict. You can get the bin right and still have made a mistake.
There's like a 10% contamination rule where it's like more than that and they can't actually compost it or they can't recycle it. And I think a lot of times it probably goes over that.
Yeah. And I'm not even 100% sure that these are recyclable.
They tell me that Berkeley High actually has as low a waste diversion rate as any other school in the district. And with the most students of any of the Berkeley schools, they have the biggest impact. Zoe looks at the bigger picture and the global movements young people are trying to lead to protect the planet. The United Nations has predicted that global warming will hit disastrous levels by 2030 if major changes aren't made. And for young people, it feels like that year is quickly approaching.
We're kind of going downhill at this point, and we're approaching a deadline, and it feels like we need immediate action. And I think that has to come from everyone in all areas of our lives. And at this point in time, this is the most pressing issue that our generation is facing, at least. And it's really important to me, I know it's really important to a lot of the students at Berkeley High, that we take this issue seriously and we make some big changes so that we can have a world to live in.
But even when people are just trying to act locally, affecting change can be easier said than done. In Berkeley, I'm Jameson Weiss for Cross Currents.
Jameson is a student at UC Berkeley, and he participated in our summer training program. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. When Kelsey Custard was growing up in Sacramento, she didn't go to the circus. And she doesn't even recall ever seeing a clown as a kid. But a theater class at UC Santa Cruz changed her life. Now she's a clown for Cirque du Soleil. Kelsey is currently making people laugh in their new show, Ama Luna. It's written and directed by a woman and centers female characters. Kelsey spoke with KALW's Janae Darden about why performing as a clown puts a smile on her face, too.
Were you always kind of jokey or funny?
Yeah.
Because I met some people that do what you do, and if I just meet them out on the street, it's totally different than on stage.
Yeah, I think some people have a complete change because it's easier to separate those things. For me, my clowning has to be who I am. So I just take who I am and kind of shoot it out even crazier. But I've always been kind of this way. I don't know. Because I was always drawn to theater, but I thought I wanted to be the, like, pretty girl on stage who everyone falls in love with. And I never got those roles or those jobs. And then when I found clowning, I kind of realized that it's because I'm not that typical pretty thing that was built up in my head that I should be, but that I could be my own self and I could take my flaws and my weirdness and my body and everything and kind of just make it into something special and unique. So I would say I do more theatrical clowning than what most people think clowning is, which is like big red wig, red nose, shapeless outfit. You know, I think that's why people are scared of them sometimes, is you can't see them as a human.
Mm-hmm.
So I do more of where you can tell that we're people, but it's being vulnerable and it's kind of bringing the things that you're self-conscious about or you have a hard time dealing with in your own self and putting them out there for people to be able to relate to and hopefully laugh at.
But what does it take? I mean, some people think it's like, oh, I could just be silly and funny.
Yeah, a lot of people have this impression that anyone can do it. And that's why it's hard, right? You want people to think that anyone can do what you do. That's makes it look easy. But I don't know. It takes a lot of work. It's a lot of being confident in yourself and rehearsal and training and getting your body into the shape to be able to do 10 shows a week. And
because you're a very physical clown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I fall down a lot.
And clowning is taking you all over the world.
Yeah. It's crazy. I never traveled before I joined the circus. So I'd never been on a plane or, like, out of the country. And so circus has really opened that door for me, and now I'm hooked. Like, I want to travel all the time.
How did the girl who had never been on a plane end up and never seen
all of a sudden be here
and never seen a clown end up a clown at Cirque du Soleil?
Well, I went to clown school after college, so there's a clown conservatory here in San Francisco, and I went there immediately as my kind of quote-unquote grad school.
What was it in there that you learned that really drew you to this art?
To be myself more, I think. And then I just loved it so much that I, with a few other people, created a troupe and we started working, doing clown gigs. And I worked for Teatro Zanzani, which used to be here, and like a few companies. And then I got asked to audition for Cirque. So I went to the audition and made it through.
How many people were you competing with?
80.
Wow. How many people did they pick?
6. And I was the only female.
Wow. So is this a field that is underrepresented as far as with women?
Big time. Big time. Mm. It's I think comedy in general
is
dominated by men. And like in clown school, I had a teacher. We didn't have a lot of girls in our class, but they told us that women weren't funny. You weren't going to make it. So he was going to teach the guys how to do hat tricks and cane tricks. And we could learn if we wanted, but and you were like, I'm in school and you're telling me that I'm not funny and not going to make it. Like, it's crazy.
How much rehearsal is involved in before a show? Like, for a show like this, how long have you all been rehearsing and practicing?
It's hard. It's a hard thing because we're always happening. So we have rehearsals every week. But the clowns, we have like a rehearsal a week. Because what we do is so heavily based on the audience and how they react, that we can fine-tune moments and work on little things and changes, but our rehearsal is kind of our practice, like being in front of the audience and trying it in front of them.
And so now you're in Ama Luna.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty female dominated, right?
Yeah.
As far as the music and
yeah,
and
we
the
have
talent.
An awesome female rock band. They're like such an amazing thing to watch and listen to every night. And it's a 70% female show, which is unheard of in Cirque. So that's really exciting. And a lot of our crew, like our stage managers, are female. Or we have a lot of female crew around. So it's a nice island to be on.
And it's about an island, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
So tell us the story. What is the story about?
So Ama Luna is loosely based on The Tempest, and it's about an island of women that are ruled by Prospera, who's our kind of queen leader, and it's her daughter Miranda's coming of age day. So I'm the nanny / caregiver / maid / I make things run on the island. And in the middle of this celebration, a storm happens and a boat of men crash onto the island. And so that's when everything kind of gets upset. And we show the, you know, real side of falling in love.
The role serious and comedic at the same time?
Yeah, a little bit. Mostly comedic, but it's kind of heavily driven in story and character. And we don't use any known language in the show.
Right.
So it's relatable and not relatable to everyone, you know? No one can understand what we're saying, which is great. But yeah, comedy, you speak with your body. So everyone can understand it.
What's it like teaching clowning to kids?
It's so fun. I mean, it's so hard, though. Kids are so funny, and they're hard to, like, wrangle in once you get them going.
Right, it's like how to be organized funny.
But I love it. Like, you get so many ideas from watching kids just be themselves. And getting to teach them clowning is, like, kind of harnessing all their energy and their crazy. And helping them, like, find a form to put it in, which is kind of what we do as adult clowns, too. And this show has been great in that I get to put my ideas on stage. I mean, it's still a big show, so they have control over certain things, but I can do a moment that's just me, and I can really have ownership of it, and that's really cool and exciting.
What happens when you're not in the mood to be funny?
Oh, you find it.
You have to go on stage and, like, entertain people.
Yeah, we all, I mean, we have those hard days. Some life happens, things happen. But for me, being on stage is like a release, right? Like, no matter how bad your day is going or whatever terrible things are happening in your life, like, getting to go on stage and make someone laugh makes everything better.
That was Cirque du Soleil clown Kelsey Custard speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. You can see Kelsey perform under the big top in Ama Luna. The show is running now till January 12th in San Francisco's Oracle Park. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henna Ababa. Next up is Audiograph, signature sounds from around the Bay Area. In this story from our archives, we head to the Bayview District, where 50 goats are hanging out at the city grazing offices. If you're confused, here's KALW's Holly J. McDeed to explain.
In the farm animal kingdom social ladder, horses are the majestic ones. Cows are sacred. Pigs are fat, and goats eat, and then eat some more. They eat like it's their job. And at City Grazing, a landscaping business that rents out goats, it is.
I'm very familiar with animals. I specialize in goats.
That's Trevorton Rose. He's one of City Grazing's resident goat whisperers. He makes sure the goats devour San Francisco's unwanted weeds with the efficiency of businessmen.
Then I would just, like, make a whistle, like, so everybody look in, everybody knows that they need to leave that area.
When the goats are not out on the job, they hang out in San Francisco's Bayview District, between the railroad tracks and a cement recycling plant. The eco-conscious among us, who don't want to use toxic herbicides to kill weeds, can rent these gentle, hooved creatures.
If I want them to come, then I just use simple, like, come, 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 come. They know that I need them to come. If I want them to run, I say, hop, hop, hop.
You might not be able to tell from his Jamaican accent, but goat whisperer Trevorton Rose is a goat.
I'm a goat myself. I'm an Aries. We actually band together. Me and this species of animal real band together.
Rose learned how to talk to goats from his father, a farmer in Jamaica. And his father learned how to talk to goats from his father, who learned how to talk to goats from, you can probably guess. 2 years ago, when Rose went back to Jamaica to visit his family, City Grazing needed a replacement goat whisperer, and fast. So naturally, they posted an ad on Craigslist. Genevieve Church signed up.
I grew up on a cattle ranch, and we had a lot of animals. And I just thought of it as a nostalgic little temp gig. Sure, I can come and take care of these animals. And it turned into now a very full-time position.
Instead of relying on specific words or sounds to rally the goats, Church likes to look thoughtfully into their eyes, say their names, and offer them treats. That's because
if you pull up onto Mission Street with a truck full of goats and you've got to get them into a backyard, you don't want those animals basing their next movement off of fear. You want them to trust you.
She introduces me to some of her friends.
This is Spock. Spock and Marvin got named after aliens because they have very pointy ears. Mary Rose is trying to eat your sweater. Goats are opportunists. If they smell anything that smells like it might be unusually tasty, they will eat it.
That's why this business works. Goats eat anything. But there's more to goats than eating. There's the goat's good looks. Mary Rose has droopy ears. Spock has big, pointy horns. Lebowski is a sweet giant. These goats have been rented out for parties, educational programs, and even television commercials.
This is an important moment in our journey to help. A project that began.
That was the sound of a goat, a screaming goat from city grazing. Goats making strange sounds like that have become something of an internet phenomenon. The YouTube video These Sounds Come From has more than 5 million views. City grazing's goats don't scream while they're on the job, though, because they're busy being happy little lawnmowers getting the job done. Now, there are a lot of oddball spectacles in San Francisco, but City Grazing's herd of goats never fails to surprise onlookers.
Yeah, people want to know, what's going on? What is this? What's going on here?
Sometimes the goats are even used as fire abatement. Especially in a drought, it's really important for all that dry brush to be gone. As far as glorified farm animals, these goats deserve to be right up there with horses. Perhaps us humans could learn from them and find a way to use our occasionally goat-like appetites for good.
Come, 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 hey!
In the Bayview, for Audiograph, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Man, take that goat out of here.
You can find more Audiographs, sounds from around the Bay Area at our website, kalw.org. And while you're at our website, make sure to sign up for the Cross Currents newsletter. Get all the stories, the interviews, the music in your inbox every week. And before we let you go, let's listen to some local music.
Hope to God you listen, open up your ears, and if you do, I pray you buy it. Loosen up your eyes and hear me out, I never shed a tear, but I am crying. Detrimental to my health because you know I'm really trying to survive it. I can hear you laughing in the back, oh man, I need it really to be silent. Trust me for once.
This is Samaria from Oakland. She's performing at band camp in her hometown as part of the Women's Audio Mission series called Local Sirens.
When you come around here, I need it to be. When you come around here, need you to hear me. Ooh, when you come. Just hide my face. Better.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Julia Linas Goodman, Kristen McCandless, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Victor Tense. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.